drawing near. Brothers, sisters, please get ready.
In this episode of Bending the Arc, we'll be in conversation with Jerry Kopich from Temple Beth Israel. This conversation, this episode, was prompted by the distribution of anti-Semitic and anti-LGBTQ literature in our community and in surrounding communities. We won't be sharing that literature or the organizations responsible for distributing it. There are plenty of stories on local news organizations about the incidents, as well as plenty of discussions about whether it constitutes hate crimes or hate speech. In this conversation, we'll be looking at many of the other impacts and our reactions to it. There are links in the show notes for how to learn more about what's happening across the nation and in our communities. And Jerry Kopich will also talk about ways that you can be involved in denouncing such activities and in standing up for community and each other. Thank you for being here. Welcome to Bending the Arc. Bending the Arc is sponsored by the Shasta Equal Justice Coalition, and we are in conversation with people in our community working for equal justice. You are listening to KKRN, KKRN.org, broadcasting from Round Mountain and Bella Vista. And today we're here with Jerry Kopich, a board member from Temple Beth Israel. And I'm going to have her introduce herself. Anything else you'd like to say to let our listeners know about you, your time in Shasta County, that sort of thing?
All right. Well, thank you for having me on, Sharon.
Sure.
I have been here in Shasta County for 33 years and a member of the Jewish community here for almost as long. Mm-hmm. We're a very small, close-knit community, and I'm happy to have a chance to share a little bit about us.
Great. And before we started, you mentioned you're a board member, but you've done other things, had other positions, and volunteered in other ways at the Temple. Can you tell us about those?
Sure. I taught Sunday school for 10 years. It was a good way to make sure my kids got there.
Yes, yes, it is.
And I've tutored kids getting ready for their coming of age ceremony, their bar and bat mitzvahs, as well as some adults who have chosen to do that later in life.
Nice. And, you know, some people know a little bit more about the history of the Temple Beth Israel here, and others don't. So could you share a little bit when it was established, how it came to be?
Sure. So I want to start off by saying that there were Jews in Shasta County as early as the 1800s, like many people that came with the gold rush. Mm-hmm. And a Jewish benevolent society was formed to help with Jewish burials at the time. In fact, if you've ever driven out 299 to Whiskeytown Lake, you might have seen the historic marker for the pioneer baby's grave. And that was a family who traveled all the way up from Red Bluff so their child could be buried in a Jewish cemetery.
Really? I didn't know that. I lived out there for quite a while.
Yeah. A little piece of history here. But Temple Beth Israel, as it is now, was first formed by a community of a small group of women who got together. They put an ad in the newspaper looking for other Jewish families. And they finally came together and organized in 1976. And then in 1980, they petitioned to join the umbrella group that most Reformed Jewish congregations belong to, called the Union of Reformed Judaism. And so we've been established as an official community since 1980.
And how many members or families, I'm not sure how you count that, do you have now?
We have about 30 active families. We know there are more people out there, but the core group consists of about 30 active family members.
And do you have a rabbi that lives here or that visits?
We're too small to have our own full-time rabbi. So what we've been doing, gosh, for about 15 years now, is we contract with the Hebrew Union College in Los Angeles, and we have student rabbis who come up. They're usually with us for a year or two, and they come and serve us one weekend a month.
Nice. So one of the reasons that you're here is you and I have been in conversation, and you've been in conversation with many people about recent incidents of distribution of anti-Semitic flyers around. And we wanted to unpack that together during our conversation. Mm-hmm. But you've become a spokesperson for these incidents, which have unfortunately... This has not been an isolated incident.
Unfortunately, yes.
Yeah, so I wanted to begin with how is it that you became that spokesperson for that people go to being the liaison for what members want to share?
Well, sort of by default. I'm kind of in charge of digital outreach, so whenever someone sends emails to the temple or messages us through Facebook, I'm the one who responds to those. Mm-hmm. So when members of the press reach out or just concerned citizens, I'm the one who is their point of contact. Mm-hmm. It also helps that at this point I'm retired, so I have more free time to be able to talk to others.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot.
It is.
Doing that.
And we've talked about it. It can be emotionally draining at times too.
Mm-hmm.
Even though we get lots of support within the Jewish community and from the broader community here in Reading area, you keep regurgitating it. You keep bringing up these things over and over again.
Mm-hmm. And I know later in the conversation, I want to circle back to that and what you do to help in those times, because it is, it's very emotional, physical, it can be really tiring. And so I want to make sure that we hear about what helps you, what sustains you during that time. The Anti-Defamation League defines anti-Semitism as the belief or behavior hostile towards Jews just because they are Jewish. And they go on to say that it may take the form of religious teachings that proclaim the inferiority of Jews or political efforts to isolate, oppress, or otherwise injure them, or any prejudiced or stereotyped images of Jews. Is there anything that you personally would want to add to or explain or take away from that definition?
You know, sometimes anti-Semitism is almost unintentional, but that doesn't mean just because it's unintentional on the part of the speaker, it still doesn't sting.
Mm-hmm.
So people will make comments about when they're trying to maybe make some kind of business deal, they talk about Jewing someone down. And people are often surprised when we bring it up. And I've talked with other members in our congregation who've had the same kind of situation when they bring up to the person who said this that is kind of a stereotypical anti-Semitic statement. And they don't realize that it comes from this sense that, you know, Jews were money lenders and therefore financially stingy. Mm-hmm. And that it's a dig at people who are Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
But it still hurts to hear it, even if the person doesn't realize they don't put any meaning behind the words specifically.
Mm-hmm. And are there other examples that you find come up frequently?
You know, during the winter holidays, when people wish other people a Merry Christmas.
Yes.
Certainly I and other people understand that part of that message is that people are just feeling those warm, fuzzy family feelings, mm-hmm. and wanting to share that with other people.
Mm-hmm.
But as people who are not celebrating the holiday, it's kind of like being constantly hit over the head from Thanksgiving until Christmas, mm-hmm. the fact that you are part of the out-group.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And when I've brought it up to other people, there are times if I say, you know, how would you feel if everywhere you went for a month, people wished you a happy Hanukkah?
Mm-hmm.
And they'd be like, I'd be okay with that. But they're not really understanding. They're not able to get deep enough into another person's shoes to see how that after a while you really start to feel like you are being excluded.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you're really describing, you know, in sociological terms or in training, that the very definition of privilege is you don't have to, it's a privilege if you aren't aware of how it might impact. Lots of people could tell you Happy Hanukkah if you're not Jewish, but the stores are still going to sell Christmas things.
Yes.
And there's still the Christmas, ugly Christmas sweater. And and it can be very touchy. I've worked at institutions where it took a lot to shift it to a holiday celebration and not just a Christmas tree and all of those.
Yes, and certainly I understand that people aren't deliberately trying to be mean about it. I want to make sure that people hear that.
Mm-hmm.
It's those unintended slights.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, kind of going back to the implicit bias, the things that we're not even aware of doing.
Mm-hmm.
So we aren't going to link to the flyers, and you know,
thank you.
We don't need to describe them in depth, but I'm wondering if you could speak to the ways in which the flyers met that definition of being anti-Semitic.
Well, they play into old stereotypes, to old tropes, that the implication is, so they pick up on a little grain of truth and then blow it into a whole mountain.
Mm.
So, and they do that as a way to try to guide people into believing that there is this vast conspiracy by Jews who make up maybe 1% of the whole population of the United States,
mm-hmm.
this vast conspiracy to take over the world.
Mm-hmm.
And some of this is rooted in something that came out in the late 1800s called the Protocols of Zion, which have been proven numerous times by non-Jews to be completely made up. It was a piece of Russian propaganda to try to get sympathy against people who were speaking out against the Tsar. And so if you blame somebody else, you know, it's good to have a scapegoat. It distracts people. So it kind of, all of these flyers build on that notion that somehow there is this secret organization of Jews who are trying to quash Christianity and take over the world.
Mm-hmm. And I know there's been a lot of discussion around what constitutes hate speech, and that authorities are looking at those flyers, among other things, and seeing where it fits in the definition. What is important for you for people to understand whether or not it fits into one of those definitions of hate speech or hate crime?
Well, and the people putting out these flyers know the law and they're walking this tightrope. The very fact they put that line in there is that we're just, you know, exercising our rights to free speech. The fact they have to say that means that they know that it's a thin line. People often like to ignore the fact that, yes, while we have free speech, the right to free speech in the United States, it has never been without restrictions. There are always things that one is still not allowed to say. You know, the classic example of, if there's no fire in the movie theater, you're not allowed to yell fire. But we also have laws against libel and slander, that you are not allowed to intentionally say things that are lie, that you know to be lies against other people, especially if it's going to cause them harm in some way. And so while specific individual Jews are not being targeted by these flyers, what these flyers are doing is building, they are planting seeds. And the more often something is repeated, the more often we as humans have a tendency to start to believe it.
Mm-hmm.
And so then when things happen, when actions are taken against Jews or members of the LGBTQ population or people of color, unintentionally people think, well, these are bad, evil people. They've done all these things I've been hearing about, and they kind of deserve what's coming to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is that power in repetition. We've seen it in big events in this country where things get repeated and repeated, mm-hmm. and suddenly everyone's repeating them.
Yes.
Back.
Yes. And if you live in an echo chamber and that's all you hear, then you believe that that's true.
Mm-hmm. So we mentioned earlier, this isn't the first incident of anti-Semitic literature or events here in Shasta County. What else is important for listeners to understand about both what has happened prior to this and the impact on the community?
So talking again about how those seeds of hate get built, back in 1999, the Williams brothers got involved in listening to people who were spewing hate against gays and against Jews, and they murdered two gay men here in our county.
Gary
Mattson, and a gentleman's last name was Mowder.
Mm-hmm.
And then they drove down to Sacramento and committed three acts of arson against synagogues in the Sacramento area. And so while they didn't attack Jews here in Shasta County, it was still very, very upsetting to members of our congregation and Jewish population in general that these people came from our area. And of course, we did not, I can't say we were relieved that they only killed these two gentlemen. I mean, that was a horrible act. And we felt badly for them because they too shared that otherness mm-hmm. with us. But it was so gratifying that members of Shasta Interfaith, people of different leaders of different faith communities in our area came together, stood together with us, helped us plant a garden of healing and peace to show their solidarity with us and to stand up and say, we are not okay with these actions. We people of faith, of many faiths, do not agree with lashing out at people, with killing people who are different than we are, for setting fire to places of worship that are not ours.
Mm-hmm.
And so when these flyers come around now, we remember these things of the past and we wonder who else is going to give themselves permission to take these feelings of anger to attack other people.
Mm-hmm. And to scapegoat, like you're mentioning, all the frustrations that...
Yes, yes. And we have one older member in our congregation who was a girl living in England during World War II.
Mm.
And when London was being bombed, her parents were able to send her and her sisters to a boarding school in the country for safety. But she said even there, she was beaten up on a regular basis by other girls because she was Jewish. And so when these flyers started going around, she's found this very upsetting. It keeps bringing up those memories to her, re-traumatizing her.
Mm-hmm. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Bending the Arc, and you're on KKRN, kkrn.org, out of Round Mountain. And my name is Sharon Brislair. I'm speaking today to Jerry Coppett, board member from Temple Beth Israel. You know, when you mentioned about the just now the incidents in the past, this time among the distribution there was also anti-LGBT literature mm-hmm. distributed. What do you know about the linkage between those two distributions?
Well, I know that the group involved is a white supremacist group, very right-wing Christian group, certainly not expressing the views of the majority of
mm-hmm.
Christians.
Mm-hmm.
And they want a pure white America. And part of that would also mean that, people who commit acts that they see as sins should also be targeted. It's just another way to help rally people behind them, right? To make other people the other.
Mm-hmm.
And say, we have a reason, to push these people out, to silence them.
Mm-hmm. I'm thinking to my sociology classes where we deconstruct race and how race comes to be as a social construct. And, you know, it just makes me wonder how many of those folks generations back would have been considered white when they came here.
You know?
So I'm sure there'll be people listening who have not been on the receiving end of discrimination. Many will, but some may not have experienced explicit bias or prejudice. And you mentioned your congregation member who experienced things very violently as a child. Mm-hmm. But we know from the research that there are a lot of physical health and emotional health effects to the whole community as well as people. What do you see as some of those larger impacts, or, you know, how can we explain to people what this is like experientially?
So when these flyers go around, and especially when they go around more than once, it does start to feed into the background of one's mind that you're maybe not safe, especially with people you don't know. So you become more wary, more skittish in certain public settings. You don't necessarily want to volunteer, that you're not like everybody else. And, you know, just feeling that almost shame that you're not like everybody else kind of eats away at one. You get nervous in situations that you might not have been nervous about, and we know what that does to the body. Mm-hmm. There can be the hypervigilance. So somebody says something off the cuff without intending anything by it, but now you're in that state of hyper-awareness and you take it as an attack.
Mm-hmm. Unwittingly can transmit that to children as well. We know through epigenetics how we can do that through our genes, much less how it affects our raising of children.
It's true. And I know there are some in the Jewish community, not as much here, but in some other cities that have more pronounced hate crimes, who feel like the answer is to isolate yourselves, to withdraw. That there becomes a general distrust of anybody who is not Jewish. And that's, in my opinion, is not healthy either. Mm-hmm. That when we shut ourselves off, that kind of adds to that unintentional bias, right? If you don't know anybody who is Black here in Shasta County, it's a very small percent of the population, or if you don't know anybody who's Jewish, or you don't know anybody who's transgender, we kind of unintentionally build up reservations or fears about those people and are more likely to believe negative things other people tell us. So it has these kinds of flyers of anti-Semitic events in general. When people withdraw, we kind of close the doors to communication and dialogue between us and other people. Mm-hmm. And it furthers this kind of hate and distrust. But I know people who have chosen to leave the area because they felt like Shasta County was not welcoming to Jews. And this just feeds into some people's already present misgivings. Mm.
You know, when you're sharing that, two things occur to me. And in my one, you know, definitely comes from my interaction with the LGBTQ community that, you know, often people have interactions. They don't know that they know someone who is in that community or who's Jewish, or they may not recognize someone who's biracial as being biracial. And it also occurs to me how much is lost when we don't see and have access to the full richness of people and communities here. And, you know, I'm wondering your reflections on that as someone who's very active in the community. our Shasta County community.
Thanks. You know, when my husband and I were looking to move up here, at the time we were pregnant with our first child, and we looked around and we saw how homogeneous the population was. And we did have some misgivings because we wanted our children to be raised in an environment where they saw people just as people, as much as possible. I mean, you can't totally ignore if someone's skin color is different or they wear their hair covered up or things like that, but just that they saw them as, yeah, that's just another kid in my class sort of thing. He's just another human being. You know, there's a richness of traditions in different communities. And so even if you don't necessarily follow a certain faith that's different than yours, there are other things to be gleaned from their community, whether it's just ethnic dishes that are particular to their community or different celebrations. I mean, look at how many people like to go to the Stillwater powwow who aren't Native Americans. It's just being enriched by other people's traditions, by their beliefs, and that we expand who we are as human beings, and we grow in our compassion and in our empathy, which we bring back to our own communities that we identify with.
Mm-hmm. And have you had the opportunity to be in conversation with someone who feels threatened by otherness?
I haven't had any direct conversations. You know, I've kind of had some conversations on Facebook, which aren't really a reflection of real world.
Right.
It's not a very good conversation to have.
Right. So, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, so once people are willing to engage that way on Facebook, most of them are pretty transient in their thoughts. They have a certain way of thinking of things, and it's hard to connect when you're this disembodied portion of text.
Right.
And words are hard to, it's hard to change someone's mind about an ingrained belief through words. Sometimes you have to spend time with them. They have to see who you are as a person before they start to question their own beliefs.
Yeah, the power of relationship and also seeing, you know, deeply seeing who you are and where you're coming from. You, the, you know, with a capital Y.
Yes.
Yeah, and one thing that I find in teaching too is that invitation to examine your beliefs, because we all grow and change, hopefully, and not to chuck them out the window, but to see how they might have morphed with time and experience.
I was just reading, there's a quote by a Lutheran pastor that I'm rather fond of when we're talking about, you know, the reasons why we need to speak up. And it turned out that he was alive during the time of the rise of the Nazi Party. And it turned out that initially in the first few years, he kind of agreed with things they were saying. But over time, he started to see how the impact of their words. And he thought about what it all meant and how it was playing out. And he changed his mind and he spoke out. And so his poem goes to the effect, you know, first they came for the socialists and I did not speak out because I was not a socialist. And then I came for the trade unionists. They came and I did not speak out because I was not a trade unionist. And then they came for the Jews and I did not speak out because I was not a Jew. And then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak.
I have heard that before.
I always find that very powerful. And I think that's the reason why, I know one of the questions you wanted to ask was why members of our community need to speak out when these things happen. So that even if you yourself are not Jewish, or you don't know anybody who's Jewish, when you don't speak out, there's this implied acceptance that the people who are saying these hateful things, whatever they are, think, well, they're just too shy. I'm brave enough to speak out. They're too shy. But because they're not speaking out, I know they agree with me. And that if you speak out, if you, you know, on Facebook, tell your friends, boy, I got these messages, they're so wrong. And if you talk to people in your church and you say, boy, these messages are wrong. We shouldn't be encouraging this kind of hate. We should love one another. And if you report the flyers to the police And the police are made aware over and over again that the community does not accept this kind of hate speech, whoever it's directed at. That's the way we combat hate.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, thinking about, would that be okay for your child?
Or exactly.
Or a loved one. And if not, then what do you do?
Mm-hmm. And I think that's a unifying message in just about all the world's religions, is that we should love one another.
Mm-hmm.
And we should treat one another with kindness.
Mm-hmm.
And that is important to do outside of our little groups. Right? Yeah, you don't necessarily have to adopt the ways of everybody else, but that we should show kindness and compassion for others.
Mm-hmm. You know, you, I know I've seen you in so many different community events and activities. I'm wondering if you could share the ways in which you, as a board member and representative and members of Temple Beth Israel, engage in community work more broadly in Shasta County.
Well, for many, many years, we've had members represent the Jewish community through the Shasta Interfaith Group. And in that role, we have, shared reflections at MLK celebrations, the Sikhi celebration in the spring. The Buddhists used to do a candlelight lanterns thing. Showing support for other groups, interacting with people of different backgrounds. We've also become active in part of an interfaith group called Reading Refugee Sponsor Circle. And we are currently helping two Ukrainian families here in our community get settled. We've helped support them financially for their first few months while they're getting their feet under them, assisted them in getting their paperwork in order so they could be members of our of the Reading community. And the refugee experience speaks to many Jews, since so many of our families came here as refugees between wars or after wars.
Mm-hmm.
We've tried to be involved in other events as we can across the county, both in support of those other groups and also so that other people can see us and get to know us.
Mm-hmm. You know, earlier you mentioned that Interfaith Council has been supportive through this time. What other forms of support or reaching out have other members experienced?
Well, we've had several church leaders reach out to us. Most recently, Father Aiden from All Saints.
Mm-hmm.
He reached out and said, if you ever feel unsafe at the synagogue, you're welcome to come and worship here in our space. And I was so touched by that. At that point, I hadn't met Father Aiden. And I thought that was just so kind. And I know other people have forwarded me sermons he's given, speaking out against these flyers and talking about the mixed history the church has had with anti-Semitism, and that it's time that as good Christians to move forward. And I don't think I can articulate enough how much that has meant to us to hear that unsolicited support.
Mm.
We also get a lot of support from our friends at Pilgrim. For our first 15 years, we met at Pilgrim regularly. We also have good connections with United Methodist and First Christian, and all of them have reached out at different times to let us know that they stand with us and open invitation, whatever they can do to help support us. And so much of what these kinds of hate things do, this hate speech, is to try to isolate people. And when people in the greater community reach out, you know that you're not alone. You don't have to shoulder this all by yourself, and you don't feel so small.
Mm.
So, and we've just been so fortunate that way.
you know, when it comes to events like this, and some people's initial and organization's reaction is to reach out and, you know, how can we help? And there are always groups in every community whose first reaction is to act. And action is good. We often need action. What is important for people who are ready to do something, kind of take up the banner and speak out, who are not members of the community? What's important for them to understand about right action and support?
You know, it's been such a mixed thing since these flyers have come out that kind of addressing this question in a sideways way, in that we want people to recognize that this is wrong, to speak out and say we don't want this kind of hate in our community. On the other hand, part of the reason these people put out this information is because they're looking to get more attention. They're looking to get more followers. And so every time we draw attention to it, in a way we are building them up. And we want to do the opposite. So it's trying to find that balance between we don't want to be silent because then they think we don't care or we're cowed by them. But we also don't want to add more fuel to this fire of hate that they're building. Mm-hmm. And so when people want to do things, well-intentioned people, it's trying to find that balance. Mm-hmm. As you said, you weren't going to make public these flyers. And that's good because it has the website for these people. And every time somebody goes there, they get clicks. And that we know how that builds up in the social media world. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so we don't want to, you know, pat them on the back with all our little clicks. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I'm also thinking about action and some of the groups that I've been involved with have had a lot of discussions about reaching out to you as spokesperson primarily to see how we can be supportive. And that's not necessarily the first impulse for people who are activists, let's mm-hmm. say. So I'm wondering if you can speak to that on... Is that important? Why is it important? And again, for in this particular instance, but you know, in general, reaching out to communities to be supportive in particular ways.
You know, some actions have unintended consequences, and one can't always anticipate what those will be. And sometimes you don't necessarily want saving from other people. Mm-hmm. Support, yes, but it's not like you need other people to take up the banner for you and mm-hmm. take charge.
My own thoughts are it's you can't know, no group can know what's the message that other communities want to send. So when you've had these either requests or people doing things in solidarity, what have you found yourself explaining about the message or the stance that the Jewish community here would like to take in response to this particular incident?
So part of it is what we don't want people to do is to nitpick and argue every single point. That isn't going to solve anything. If anything, it draws attention to those points.
Mm-hmm. Is it a hate crime or is it a hate speech or why isn't it or that kind of thing?
Well, that's part of it because you get lost in that whole sidetrack thing. But if I say, well, this point on this flyer is wrong because of this reason, and this point on this flyer is wrong because of this reason, it really doesn't change anything. It's not going to change the minds of the people who believe them to begin with.
For sure.
and it kind of keeps drawing people's attention to it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the point is, we just want to say this speech is mean and it's wrong. Right?
Mm-hmm.
You have a right to your opinion. That doesn't mean that I have to listen to it and that I have to sit back idly. And that's another thing that some of these flyers have said, that if you speak out against our free speech, you know, you obviously are unpatriotic. Well, then they're trying to quell our free speech.
Mm.
Yeah, sure, you have the right to say it. I have the right to say I don't like it.
Mm.
Mm. And I think that's more, I think sometimes when people from outside the community want to help out is that they focus on the small pieces instead of saying, we just need to focus on, this is wrong, we need to stand up and say, we don't agree with it.
Mm.
That we, from outside of the community, whether the LGBT community, the Jewish community, people of color, we people who are not identifying with these groups who are being targeted, we say it's wrong.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's the most effective message. And I think people don't always see that. They just say, oh, this thing was so wrong that they said, and they focus and they drill in on that.
Mm-hmm.
And
or
they get
argue
lost.
About it.
Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's helpful.
And then sometimes, in some senses, it's almost too generic. So there was a discussion about putting out posters, yard signs and things. And it started off with, because these flyers had come out, and it was, the message was going to be, we should love everybody, which mm-hmm. is, yes, that's true, we should. But the intention had been to speak out against the messages in these flyers, and this kind of just went off on a different tangent.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it was a lot of money and effort going into something that didn't seem to be effectively doing what people had hoped it was going to do.
Right. What does the Jewish faith teach about responding to hate and discrimination?
So there is a line somewhere in the Torah that says, you know, you should speak out, you should reprove, you should reproach, you know, you should say, no, that's bad, to your neighbor, but you shouldn't embarrass them.
Mm.
So, you know, calling names back or humiliating somebody who has said something hateful is not in the Jewish tradition. Right? You can say that is wrong and a vile thing to say, but that's where you should leave it, right? You shouldn't stoop down to that level.
It's kind of like that adage, praise in public and say difficult things or share criticism in private.
Yes, yes. You don't want to take on the same actions of the people who are doing the hateful things.
Mm-hmm. What about larger social injustices? What's the call or the invitation?
So Judaism, one of its ethical precepts is called Tikkun Olam, which is repairing the world. And very much, especially in the Reform branch of Judaism, there is this sense that we should speak up for injustice against all people. They're very active in anti-LGBTQ legislation, in standing in solidarity with Black Lives Matter. I mean, Jews were very active in the civil rights movements in the 60s. There were rabbis who marched with Martin Luther King. An injustice to one is an injustice to all.
And, you know, you are here as part of this, you know, Shasta Equal Justice Coalition, you know, Bending the Arc show, and we talk with a lot of different people about issues of equal justice for everyone, regardless of identities. What are the core equal justice issues for you here? How do incidents like this affect the possibility of equal justice in our community?
It's kind of like water eroding away at a riverbank, right? So if you start eroding away at Jews, and that kind of gets acceptance. And now we start eroding away at LGBTQ folks, and that gets acceptance. And we keep digging deeper and deeper and deeper and eroding and opening the wound or as a wound further. So that it's important that we stand up as part of equal justice, that we don't just think about ourselves. For justice to truly be equal, we have to speak up for everybody.
Mm-hmm. You know, earlier, at the very beginning, we were sharing, or you were sharing, about how being a spokesperson, experiencing these things, being in a community where these things happen, can be very difficult. Emotional, we talked about the physical effects, and, you know, there's something I kind of describe as a soul mm-hmm. Hurt.
Yes, yes.
What do you do to care for yourself during these times? What do you do? Where do you go?
I talk with friends. I have a very supportive husband, kind of talks me down off the ledge of things on a regular basis. I'm fortunate enough to live in the country, and I go for walks with my dog. Mm. I find that very calming and peaceful. You just get to kind of take a deep breath.
Mm-hmm. And is there anything else that motivates you or sustains you in continuing to be that spokesperson to coming today on this radio show to talk about it? What keeps you going?
You know, I think in part it's because all of my grandparents came here as immigrants, fleeing hate and persecution in various parts of Europe. And so I have this feeling like I need to stand up for them, and to stand up for my children who are adults and grown and doing, you know, pretty stable on their own two feet, but still that sense of passing on to future generations, that sense of safety and security. Mm. So kind of my connection to my past and my future.
Mm-hmm. So we've talked about a number of things. What haven't we talked about that's important to you when you think about this work?
And what I think is important is that I want to acknowledge people from outside of the Jewish community who have spoken out against these things, spoken to their neighbors, contacted television and other press to speak out against it. That a couple weeks ago after services, the rabbi and I were closing up, and a gentleman who we didn't know came and knocked on the door, and he said, "I wanted to let you know that somebody left this flyer in my neighborhood." And I reached out to the police and got a mixed response, and I tried reaching out to the television station, and I want to make sure you knew. So this was somebody who had no connection with anybody in the Jewish community, and even though he had faced some barriers along the way, he took the time to get in his car, find us, mm-hmm. drive over and make sure we knew. Mm. And those little acts, you might feel as a lone individual, what can you do against this organizations that are spewing hate? That one little act was so meaningful to me. Mm. You know, and I've made a point of sharing it with others in our community so they could feel that too. Mm. So I want to encourage people to please speak out. Mm-hmm. Talk to your friends, talk to your neighbors, talk to people in your faith communities, your volunteer organizations. Please report these things to the police or the sheriff. Even though it's not a crime, we still want the police to be aware of how many of these incidents are happening and to make sure that people know it's not okay here. Mm-hmm.
Have you all gotten a mixed reaction, mixed response from law enforcement?
It does seem to depend who someone calling in gets in touch with. There are certainly members of the Reading Police Department who are very supportive, who have been listening to us, who are in contact with the ADL, the American Defamation League, who have taken reports and put things on Facebook saying, hey, please report to us any of these things or if you have any footage. But sometimes they'll run into people who, maybe just through not enough training, have kind of been dismissive of it. And it's like, well, it's no different than getting, you know, pamphlets from Jehovah's Witness or something like that. That they're not understanding how insidious these kinds of things can be. We haven't had as open a reception from some members of the sheriff's department, but I don't want to paint everybody in the sheriff's department with this brush. It's just been right. Our limited experience with them.
Mm-hmm. And again, you have shared a lot, but is there anything else that you feel is really important for those in the community or in the criminal legal system to understand about the impact of incidents like this?
So it's important for people to understand that it leads to feeling of unsafety for members of targeted communities. I think it's also important that that the reports be taken and the statistics compiled, because it shows a pattern of behavior. And if down the road, hopefully not, but if down the road someone were to decide to take action, then having this history of these events is important documentation. That it's not something that just come up out of the blue, that we know these things have been happening. I mean, look at how indignant people get when they find out that someone who commits a horrible crime had been a person of suspicion by the police before and the police didn't act. Mm-hmm. This is similar to someone committing a murder that the police kind of knew this person was, had some issues, and people create actually doing a hate crime when the police knew there was a history of hate.
Mm-hmm. So following that history, documenting, taking those things seriously.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
And if people wanted to learn more about how to support you, learn more about history, Jewish history and culture, or the impact of anti-Semitism, any of that. If people wanted to educate themselves more, what would you suggest?
Well, if people want to learn more about how to take action, I would recommend that they go to the American Defamation League, ADL.com, I believe. Mm-hmm.
We'll put a link.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. And that's also a place that I would encourage people to report if they get flyers as well. Just fill out, it's just a brief form, just to document that this happened, because they too like to compile statistics. And if they just want to learn about Judaism in general or more about the history of anti-Semitism, there's a great website called myjewishlearning.com. And you can put in there anti-Semitism, and you can find articles about the history of anti-Semitism and myths about anti-Semitism, as well as learn about Jewish history and Jewish holidays and rituals. And it's written for just average people to read. You don't have to, you know, have a PhD or a college degree to understand things on this website. Mm-hmm. It's very accessible.
Wonderful. Well, Jerry Coppedge, thank you so much for sharing with us and for being on the show and for all the work that you do to help educate and serve our larger community.
Well, thank you, Sharon. I appreciate having this forum, and I appreciate your very thoughtful questions and your taking your time to invite us.
You have been listening to Bending the Arc, a show sponsored by the Shasta Equal Justice Coalition and broadcast here on KKRN, kkrn.org, from Round Mountain and Bella Vista, California. Feel free to stream all of our shows, check out the archived shows, and make a donation. And this show and opinions expressed are those of myself and my guest, and not necessarily those of KKRN Community Radio or Acorn Community Enterprises or any of the underwriters of this show. Thank you for listening.